tackling tough topics to help you think reasonably about life's most important issues. This is Thinker Sensitive. Welcome to Thinker Sensitive. My name is Ryan Ragazine, and I am the host of the Thinker Sensitive podcast. This episode is the final episode of our season entitled The Simple-Minded Society. So far, we've talked quite a bit about utilizing trustworthy news and media sources to gather information and form opinions. We've also talked a lot about the issue of censorship, which results in a shrinking or diminishing of the public square. As a religious person, this concerns me because I feel like I'm starting to see religion and religious belief get censored out of the public sphere. And I believe in a free marketplace of ideas. I believe that in a free democracy, everybody should have a seat at the table and everybody should have a voice. So on this final episode, I want to talk about the criteria that we use to assess what is true and what is not true, what is good and what is bad. I want to discuss the standards that we use to evaluate truth claims and moral propositions in the public square. The secular critique of bringing religious beliefs into the public sphere has a long history. It goes back to the Enlightenment, the French Revolution, the modern idea of neutrality, and the development of the modern nation-state. But we don't have time to trace the historical development of this understanding right now. And let me just say to be clear, I'm not in any way a proponent of the fusion of church and state, and I agree with many of the historical developments and changes that were made in the West in response to the history of European Christendom. But I want to take a look at the standard critique of and the general argument against religious belief in the public square. The argument often goes like this. Religious belief comes from sacred religious literature. Religious literature is highly subjective, as opposed to the objectivity found in the modern public square. And it's highly relative, first, to a particular historical cultural setting, which is often understood as archaic, outdated, less evolved, barbaric, and even naive. It's also relative, second, to a particular geographical context or setting. It's tied to a specific place or locale, usually a non-Western setting. It's also said that religious belief is purely faith-based, as opposed to the fact-based knowledge that's found in the public sphere. Because of all of this, it's argued that religious belief doesn't belong in the public sphere and should be relegated to the private and personal dimensions of human life. This means that sacred literature, religious tradition, and the religious beliefs that stem from these subjective, relative, and faith-based criteria should not be used to evaluate truth and ethics in the public square. Personally, as I assess the nature of this argument, I can't help but think that there is some ignorance here. I can't help but think that there is some arrogance here. I think that there is some hypocrisy here. I think there's some inconsistency. And I also think there's some irony. Every human criterion or standard, whether on an individual or corporate level, that is used to evaluate truth is necessarily subjective, relative, and faith-based by definition. I've talked about this quite a bit. Atheism, for example, is just as subjective, relative, and faith-based as theism is. Religious standards are not the only standards that are subjective. Non-religious standards and criteria that are used to evaluate truth in the public sphere are also subjective, relative, and faith-based. And in a provisional, conditional sense, are actually more subjective than theistic or religious standards. And I'm going to unpack what I mean by this as we go along. I want to first look at non-religious or non-theistic norms, standards, and criterion for truth. The first standard that I've listed here are personal and inner feelings, which are, of course, subjective, relative, and faith-based. The second standard is evolutionary development. The evolutionary process is relative to the subjective conditions of time and space. Confidence in it as a trustworthy source of truth is merely faith-based. Within the context of materialistic reductionism, evolutionary development has no authority on truth. What does a mindless process with no regard for truth, because it has no actual regard for anything, because it has no mind, no thoughts, what does such a process have to do with truth? A purely evolutionary understanding of knowledge from a materialistic perspective completely undermines human rationality and the knowing process itself. If you're interested in knowing why I believe this, I'd refer you to the arguments of Alvin Plantinga, one of the greatest analytic philosophers to ever walk this earth, a distinguished professor of philosophy at Notre Dame, who was educated at the University of Michigan, go blue, and Yale University, and I believe Harvard as well. The next non-religious or non-theistic standard that's often used to evaluate what's true and what's good would be one's political party, which is made up of finite, fallible, biased, self-interested, subjective human beings. Human beings who are relative to time and space. The appropriation of one's political party as a norm or a standard to evaluate what's true and what's not true, what's good and what's bad, is faith-based. Another common non-theistic or non-religious norm would be the sciences. If you look at the history of science, you'll find that the conclusions of the sciences are often fluid and change throughout time. This displays the subjectivity and relativity of the sciences. Scientists are just as finite, fallible, subjective, relative, biased, and self-interested as the rest of us. I have a high view of science. As I've stated before, I think science is one of the most trustworthy human disciplines. But I also understand the real limitations and boundaries of science. There are so many things that science simply can't speak to. The last standard that I have here is cultural progress and prevailing societal sentiments. Cultural progress is completely relative to to a particular time and a particular place. It is also the product of finite, fallible, subjective, biased human beings. It's also worth noting that human progress has destroyed just as much as it has renewed. Look at how much our modern industrial and technological advancements have damaged our planet, for example. Almost every great civilization throughout the history of humankind has believed that they represented the pinnacle of human progress. These civilizations, these kingdoms, these nations, these societies rise and they fall. All people and all societies have one thing in common. They all come to an end. I want to take a deeper look real quick at this notion of progressivism as a criterion for truth. This idea that whatever is prevailing in the immediate present, in my time and space, in my culture, is true and good. First, how do we know what the consensus view on something actually is? Sometimes the narratives that get the most exposure in our culture are actually minority opinions. They appear to be prevailing views, but they're simply what the media selectively chooses to give the most airplay to based on a variety of motives and agendas. Second, this is the definition of ethnocentricity. I guess you could also say it's the definition of nationalism. This idea that my culture is right. My society is good. What about all the other cultures in the world? What about all the other societies around the globe who think differently, who live differently, who have different beliefs and different viewpoints and different worldviews? What about them? Third, and I'm going to make up some words here, this is also blatant geocentricity and storia-centricity. My particular geographical location is where truth is found. My particular time in history is where goodness is found. And fourth, this view also represents the deification of the human and the deification of culture, the absolutizing of the subjective. All human norms, all human standards, all human criteria used for making judgments are subjective, relative, and faith-based because they all involve the human subject. The public sphere is a subjective sphere because it's a human sphere. This doesn't mean that all judgments and all criteria used to make those judgments are congruent or equally valid. But it does mean that preference or favoritism and disapproval or censorship must be supported by rational argumentation. Preference and favoritism towards certain standards in the pursuit of morality and truth, and disapproval and censorship of other standards in the same pursuit, must be supported by reason. The religious perspective, or the theistic perspective, is that all subjective standards lack real authority. They are not objective, absolute, eternal, infinite, transcendent, and enduring. Only God, if such a being exists, can bring objectivity to truth and reality. Only God, if such a being exists, knows truth objectively God, the infinite, the absolute, is the one who objectivizes and absolutizes all things. A personal God in particular is the only possible standard that would both not be conditioned by space and time and would possess real moral authority. For example, thinking of Platonic idealism, what actual authority does an impersonal Platonic ideal or universal possess? An impersonal idea or universal has no mind or will or character. What authority would such a thing hold? How would it display its authority? To take God out of the picture is to take objective authority out of the picture. If God exists, the only thing that matters is what this being thinks. Personally, I don't really care all that much what fallible, finite, biased, subjective, relative human beings and the cultures that they make up think about controversial and important issues. And that includes myself. I don't really care what my subjective opinion is either. What subjective humans, including myself, think about these things makes no difference in the end. The only question that has eternal validity and infinite significance is, what does God think about these things? Again, God's opinion is the only one that really matters. Here's the problem. How do we know if God exists? And even if he exists, how do we know what he thinks? This is a question that we'll attempt to answer progressively and provisionally throughout the lifespan of Thinker Sensitive. But for now, I'll conclude this season and this episode with some final thoughts. The sweeping away of religion from the public sphere is the expression, whether one is conscious of it or not, of anti-religious bias and religious intolerance. Blind dismissal or dismissiveness is simply unacceptable here. The apparent societal assumption that non-religious worldviews, norms, and beliefs are better than religious ones must be substantiated through rational argumentation. Otherwise, the censorship and intolerance of the religious voice in the public square is unfounded. To be specific, I think that atheists or non-theists must prove that God doesn't exist and that the world would be a better place without the idea of God. I think that agnostics or the non-religious person must prove that any attempt to know God is utterly futile and pointless, and that the world would be a better place without any thought given to God. In my opinion, one must demonstrate that atheistic presuppositions or an agnostic worldview is better than a theistic perspective when it comes to promoting the public good and the general welfare of the people. If I'm a non-religious person, and I believe that my subjective norms are better than the religious person's subjective norms, and that my subjective worldview is better than the religious person's worldview, then I think I bear the burden to prove it. If one doesn't believe that God has any place in the public sphere, then one's arguments, both in terms of quality and quantity, need to be stronger than the religious person's arguments. If they aren't, then I think we need to reassess this modern and contemporary idea of the relegation of religion to the private sphere. To me, there's a lot of presumptuousness here. And I wonder if, in regards to issues like capital punishment or immigration or assisted suicide and active euthanasia, if atheistic or non-religious norms should be the only norms used to assess these issues. Why? What's the justification? I'm a firm believer in an inclusive, rational competition of ideas. Let the best ideas and the best arguments, not just simply about God, but about everything, win out in our society. Honestly, I'm not so sure that they are right now. In some cases, I'm not so sure that the best arguments, the most rational ones, are even getting much of a voice at all. And that's concerning to me. May the most well-supported and rationally grounded worldviews and norms from those worldviews and beliefs from those norms prevail in culture. But I'm not sure that I trust the masses to make these judgments. And I'm not so sure that I trust our democracy to work the way that one would hope. Maybe Rousseau was right. Maybe a healthy democracy is an ideal that can never fully be realized. This episode and all episodes of Thinkersensitive are available at thinkersensitive.com, iTunes, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content and wish to donate to help us grow our online community of thinkers, please visit thinkersensitive.com.